Welcome to episode 213 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com here for April the 8th, 2012. April the 8th, I said. It's like Henry the 8th, I guess. I'm Henry the 8th, I am. Henry the 8th, I am. It is April 8th, 2012. I apologize. I will never sing on this show again. I am back from Miami after what I can honestly say was probably the best weekend of my life. As a wrestling fan, it really just doesn't get any better than last weekend. WrestleMania 28 in the books. Obviously, last week, those of you who tuned into the Sound Off were treated to a very special episode, a very unique show, one that I have never done before. We did kind of a roundtable show on location in Miami last Friday night. It was myself. I was joined by my good buddy Noah Mark and Brian Blade, who actually elicited more feedback than anybody else who appeared on the show last week. A lot of people out there hated this man. They hated Brian Blade, and that just warmed his heart like you wouldn't believe. So it was good to have them on the show for a unique perspective. We did our WrestleMania predictions, which I'm not going to run away from my predictions. They were not good. The results were they left a little bit to be desired, but we'll get into that. We also had exclusive clips from interviews that we conducted at WrestleMania Access a little over a week ago with some of the biggest names, quite frankly, in WWE history, and it's still something I can't believe that we were able to pull off, but we did. We interviewed John Cena, one half of the WrestleMania main event and the biggest star in wrestling right now, whether you like him or not. We interviewed the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, one of the greatest performers of all time. Of course, he was the special referee in the End of an Era Hell in a Cell match. We talked to the Rated R Superstar, Edge, got a first look at his new haircut before most other people did. And we talked to him on the eve of his Hall of Fame induction, as well as the Four Horsemen, or two of them anyway, the combination of Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, the former Brainbusters in WWF. I still am just struggling to believe that I actually had the opportunity to interview Arn and Tully together. That is by no means something I ever thought I would be able to do, especially since Tully Blanchard has, for all intents and purposes, been out of the wrestling industry since 1989, as he talked about in the interview. He made a series of mistakes, and his career pretty much ended at that point. And to be able to sit in front of Arn and Tully together as they talked about their career in the NWA, their brief time in WWE, and be able to ask them questions about that 24 hours away from their Hall of Fame induction was something that I will never forget. We also had a chance to talk to the then World Heavyweight Champion, somebody I have been singing the praises of since his Ring of Honor days, Daniel Bryan, who has been the subject of quite a bit of debate and talk ever since WrestleMania. We'll get into that. We talked to Kofi Kingston. We also talked to Kelly Kelly. We just didn't have an opportunity to include her interview in the show last week. It was more due to time constraints, and somebody had to be cut, and unfortunately it was Kelly. But I do have some audio from our Kelly Kelly interview and from one of the questions I asked her that I am going to play here. It's a little over a minute, just so I can say that I played it. I would hate for it to go to waste. She was actually very cool to talk to. We kind of were cracking jokes a little bit. I'm going to play that in just a second. So all of those interviews were part of the Sound Off last week in addition to our WrestleMania roundtable. To me personally, it was the greatest Sound Off I've ever done. I think for me in large part just because it was a little bit different, it was unique, and being able to interview some of the biggest names in wrestling, I mean, come on, you can't beat that. So if you missed Sound Off 212 from Miami last week, it did push to iTunes a little bit late, but it is up there. Definitely go back and listen to it if you missed it, because like I said, to me, one of, if not the best Sound Off of all time. So if you missed it, you definitely want to go back and listen to it. If you already listened to it, go back and listen to it again, because that show hopefully was as fun for you to listen to as it was for us to do. We were pretty much running on fumes at that point when we did that show. We were just going balls to the wall doing, and that was just in the first 2 days that I was down there. We were doing so many different things, and We stayed up hours for editing and just trying to get that thing nailed down. So definitely go back and check that out. And actually, before we move on, I may as well go ahead and play the clip from our interview with the former Divas champion, Kelly Kelly, who during the course of our interview, I think I mentioned this when we did the predictions last week, Kelly did kind of tip her cap to us that she was going to debut a new move at WrestleMania that she had been practicing. She was very excited to tell us about the move. She wouldn't tell us what it was or what part of the match that she might do it. But she did give us a little bit of a scoop, which, of course, we proceeded to not use. But she did say she was going to unveil a new move at WrestleMania. I assume what she was referring to, if you go back and watch that match, towards the end, Kelly did this pretty impressive cannonball move off the top rope. And I'm pretty sure that's probably the move that she was referring to that she debuted at the pay-per-view. But we also talked to Kelly a little bit about some other things. I wanted to ask her about any backstage influences as far as the guys, you know, the male wrestlers, anybody that she has worked with, anybody who has been particularly helpful to her. You know, we all know the story that Fit Finlay for many years was in charge of kind of, I don't want to say overseeing the Divas division, but he was very helpful in terms of giving them advice and training them in the ring before the shows. And then Finlay, unfortunately, was fired from WWE. I'm not sure if he's officially back or not. He was at the Hall of Fame. He also was at the Wrestle Reunion event last weekend, and I'll talk more about that. But here is a snippet from our interview that did not air last week with Kelly Kelly.
You mentioned before, you know, Cena's been around. He's been very helpful. Is there any, whether it's Cena or somebody else, is there any male superstar on the roster that has been very helpful to you more than anybody else, whether it's giving you advice or working with you?
Well, Tommy Dreamer, when he was here, he was a big, like, he was definitely had my back, and he was a great guy to go to. And now Big Show is actually, he's
gentle giant.
He totally is. Like, he'll, like, sit me up and, like, give me advice and be like, I think this is good and this isn't. And, you know, and then even boyfriend advice, he's always like, listen.
Somebody, they have to pass the litmus test. They have to meet Big Show first.
Oh, yeah. To get the weapon of mass destruction.
My boyfriend now, like, actually met Show, and I warned Show. I was like, listen, you're gonna be my boyfriend, like, you better be nice. He's like, all right, let me do that. And he, like, goes up and he, like,
scared him.
He, like, gives him the stern handshake, like, hey dude, what's up, and like squeezes his hand. And my boyfriend's a big guy, like, he's a hockey player, he's like 6'5", but he's like, oh my god, his hand's like as big as my head. And he totally, like, and it's so Big Show, like, walked his hand, and he, like, walked away, and listen, he's like, oh my god, why did you do that to me?
And what you didn't know is, like, that her boyfriend was unable to play hockey for 6 months.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's it? Wow.
That was from our interview with Kelly Kelly, which was conducted in part for Sound Off 212, although, again, that did not air on the show last week. But our interviews with other superstars like Kofi and Edge and Cena and everybody else, that is part of the show. So please go back, check out the show, subscribe in iTunes, leave some feedback. God, if there was ever a time to leave some feedback or a rating for the show in iTunes, now would be the time. I would very much appreciate that. And let me know what you thought. It was a hell of a show. Like I said, we had fun doing it. It was a unique show, something out of the ordinary. I wanted to do something down in Miami, and that show would not have happened without the help of Noah Marks. So I want to give him a lot of credit for that. He was able to, with the hardware and the software, actually literally make that show happen. And also a big thanks to him and also CBS Radio for making those interviews happen as well. It's an experience that, again, as a fan, I'll never forget, being able to talk to some of those guys during WrestleMania weekend. They could not be any cooler. And actually, the coolest guy of the bunch, not to say that anybody wasn't, cool or cranky or anything like that, but Daniel Bryan, I think, and I think we would probably all agree, was actually the coolest of the bunch for us to talk to. Just a very down-to-earth, laid-back kind of guy. And I just like the fact that up until that point, you know, the biggest champion I ever had the opportunity to interview, active champion to interview for my show, was the then Ring of Honor TV champion, who actually just lost his television title only last weekend in Fort Lauderdale, Jay Lethal, which was another great interview that was part of Sound Off 187. But now I can say that we had the opportunity to interview who was then the World Heavyweight Champion in WWE, Daniel Bryan. Unfortunately, he is no longer the World Heavyweight Champion. One other thing I want to mention here before we move on, got a lot to talk about from WrestleMania weekend. For those of you who may be interested and may have missed it, I did go ahead and post up a photo gallery of pretty much, I think it was about 99 or 100, about 100 photos taken over the course of WrestleMania weekend from Access, from our interviews with the WWE superstars. There are photos up there of us with John Cena, Daniel Bryan, Edge, The Horseman, and everybody, and Kelly, and everybody in between. Photos from Wrestle Reunion on that Saturday. There was a legend show as well. WrestleMania 28 at Sun Life Stadium. Some great photos from WrestleMania. And the WrestleMania press conference before the event as well. Monday Night Raw at the American Airlines Arena. All that good stuff. If you want to check out exclusive photos from WrestleMania weekend, there is a huge photo gallery up on my Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/TheSolomonster. For those of you who may be confused, I've gotten some questions about this. My name on Facebook is The Solomonster. It's T-H-E-E, Solomonster, for reasons that I don't want to get into. It's kind of silly, actually. So if anybody should have any difficulty finding me on there, which you should not have any difficulty, like I said, just go to facebook.com/TheSolomonster. The direct Facebook link actually is also on my Twitter bio, so you can check it out there as well. But you got to friend me on there to get access, and there's a huge gallery up there, 100 photos, and some videos as well. One of the others, actually, you know what, I'll wait to get into that. Let's recap the entire WrestleMania experience going back to the beginning here. Because like I said, as a fan, I've been a fan for many, many years. And in all of that time, for whatever reason, I have never been to a WrestleMania before. And I would tell people this, and they would be, oh, you never went to, you know, Mania at the Garden in 94 or 2004. No, I never did. And there was never any reason for it other than I was probably piss poor at the time and just couldn't go, or tickets sold out very quickly, because it's a lot more difficult to get tickets, for example, to Madison Square Garden for a WrestleMania when you had 18,000 tickets maybe to be had, as opposed to Sun Life Stadium in Miami, which still had tickets on sale the day of the show. But you can fit 70-something thousand people in there if you will. Actually, probably closer to 60-something thousand. I know they claimed a record of 78,000 people at WrestleMania. That's bullshit. But I just had never been to one before. And it was actually Webmaster Mike, who I also want to thank, who convinced me finally to come on down to Miami. I checked out what tickets were available, made the necessary arrangements, and went down there and again, had the time of my life. And I flew down that Thursday. We actually hit up Access that night. And Access is something, as I said on 212, that if you've never been a part of, I think a ticket to Access is maybe $35, $40 at the most. It's totally worth it. If you're a real wrestling fan, even a casual fan, I think would get a kick out of walking around and seeing the different exhibits and getting to meet some of the superstars. To me, it wasn't even so much about meeting superstars, especially since I had already met a whole bunch of people earlier in the day. Or the following day, I should say. But it was more just walking around, checking out the exhibits. They have the Undertaker's Graveyard exhibit, which is just very well done. The effects, the way it's set up and laid out, they put a lot of thought and effort into it. The detail, you really appreciate it walking around. And they have, you know, the different headstones for all the people that the Undertaker has defeated. They have the original funeral parlor set as part of that exhibit. You could take pictures in the casket standing upright, which is a little eerie, but it's also very cool if you are a fan. So they have things like that, the championship title displays with practically every belt you can imagine, including a WCW tag belt, which was kind of thrown in there. I don't know why, but that was part of the display as well. There's rings that you could actually get into and you can pose for photos in there. They had, you know, WWE legends on hand, and we had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to meet both Tony Atlas and Howard Finkel, both of whom are going to be part of the, or I should say who were part of the Legends House cast. And I have some news to get to on Legends House a little bit later on in this show. But meeting Tony Atlas was very cool. He was actually a very funny guy. And, Noah got him to do the laugh. Brian got him to do the laugh a couple of times that he used to do when he was part of the Abraham Washington show in ECW. And meeting Howard Finkel was another thing that was actually very cool for me, because I've always been a big fan of Howard Finkel. I think that it's a crime that he's not used more often. His days of being a full-time everyday ring announcer are over. But I still feel as though Fink should be used, for example, at WrestleMania, and for more than just introducing the latest Hall of Fame class. You know, there are special events like that. Howard Finkel has an iconic voice that really hasn't changed. And I've said this before, you know, God forbid if at some point if, you know, something happens to Howard Finkel, or if he gets sick, God forbid, I think there's going to be people in WWE, and maybe Vince McMahon would be among them, who are going to regret the fact that they have had this guy sitting on the sidelines for so long and haven't used him, because at some point, you know, they say you don't know what you got till it's gone. Howard Finkel's not going to be around forever, and I just feel like this guy still has some really solid years left in him. And I made the comment on the Sound Off last week that when I met him, I made a comment about the New York Mets, because we're both Mets fans. He is a big, big baseball fan, but I didn't realize how big of a baseball fan Howard was. He made a comment to me, you know, something to the effect of, I'm a much bigger fan of baseball than I am of the current product, referring obviously to WWE, which, again, took me off guard when he said that. I don't want to say he came off as bitter, but it was not a comment I was expecting him to make. So a bit of a candid comment there from the Fink, but very nice to meet him at Access. And we actually got there on a night when they were having some live matches. This was last Thursday night. They were taping some stuff for SmackDown the very next day. The first match we got ringside for at Access was actually an FCW match, and they had Mr. Antonio Cesaro come to the ring. Of course, he is the former Claudio Castagnoli from Ring of Honor. So getting to see Claudio up close and in person in action was actually really cool. He had a match with Bo Rotundo and lost, which people booed. They wanted to see Claudio win, and he did not. We were also treated to a non-title match, tag team match, the Usos against the reigning tag team champions Primo and Epico, which was actually a pretty good match. The Usos beat them. They did not win the belts. So that was actually a really cool way to kick off the trip with Access last Thursday. Again, if you've never been, I would highly recommend you go. It's just a lot of fun. You can get a lot of cool photos. They have certain things. For example, they have the Money in the Bank briefcase hanging, and you can take a picture that WWE will take of you kind of reaching up for the briefcase. They give you these WrestleMania Access cards that you then take back to your computer. You punch in a code, and they have the pictures online for you. So just very cool stuff. And the very next day, the next morning, we actually had a very early morning wake-up to do the interviews on Radio Row that I already talked about, which was, if not certainly the highlight of the weekend, one of the highlights of the weekend for all of us. I talked that on Saturday. Last Saturday, we were going to be attending Wrestle Reunion. And Wrestle Reunion is a completely independent event. It has nothing to do with WWE, but there had been six of them. The one that we attended was Wrestle Reunion 7, which was over the course of 3 days. And it's an event that's organized by Bill Apter, which is a name that any longtime wrestling fan would know. You may have heard the term Apter Mags back in the day, the Apter magazines. Bill Apter has been a part of the wrestling business for forever. And this was Wrestle Reunion 7 in Miami. A very smart move on their part to have the convention in Miami, knowing that there was going to be this convergence of wrestling fans down in the area. And there was a decent number of people there, too, at least the day that we went. I specifically wanted to go on Saturday because it came to my attention that Bobby the Brain Heenan was going to be at Wrestle Reunion for only a couple of hours that Saturday only. And as I mentioned to Noah and Brian, I said, listen, if we're going to carve some time into our schedule for Wrestle Reunion, it has to be the day that Bobby is going to be there. I must meet the Brain. I've never met Bobby the Brain Heenan before. He was an idol of mine growing up, the greatest manager of all time. There can be no debate about that. There have been some great managers. J.J. Dillon just went into the Hall of Fame. Jim Cornette was very good. Paul Bearer, no slouch himself, but I'm sorry, there has never been a better wrestling personality or wrestling manager than Bobby Heenan. And Bobby has fallen on some very tough times in recent years, obviously. He has endured multiple bouts of throat cancer, which he has conquered. But in the process, the treatment, the radiation, the chemotherapy has taken such a toll on him that you look at him and he's almost unrecognizable at this point. He can speak, but he's very difficult to understand. His wife was with him. Pretty much to translate what he was saying when you would go up to him. So I knew this going in. It wasn't as much of a shock to me, but still, when you first walk up to him and you see him, your heart just sinks, you know, because you're very happy to see him and that he's alive and doing well enough, but still, to see Bobby that way was just heartbreaking. It really was. It was depressing in a lot of ways. It was heartbreaking, but you shake it off, and at the end of the day, getting to meet Bobby Heenan was, again, one of the highlights of the trip for me. And it was completely unexpected because I did not originally even know he was going to be there. So it was actually a pleasant surprise to find out that he was. And you can see the photo of me and Bobby is actually up on Facebook right now. it's, again, shocking if you don't know what he's been through. It really hits you at first when you look at the photo. But that photo right there is one of those images I will always treasure, because getting to meet him was just a really cool thing for me. And the brain is still there. You know, even though physically he's been through hell, he doesn't really look the same, he's tough to understand, the mind is still there. It almost is like he's trapped inside this ravaged body. You just feel terrible for him. But I wore a That's Not Fair to Flair shirt, courtesy of Barbershop Window, which, if you're not familiar with Barbershop Window, check them out. They've got some, if you like wrestling shirts. I don't really buy wrestling shirts anymore like I used to, but don't even bother with WWE Shop. Go to Barbershop Window. They've got some hilarious shirts. And I had seen this shirt that they had put together many months ago that said, "That's not fair to Flair." And I thought, that's actually kind of cool. I got a kick out of it. So I got it. Not knowing that I would have the chance to meet Bobby all these months later. So when I found out I was going to be meeting him, I said, I have to wear this shirt. And hopefully he'll react to it in some way. And he did. As soon as I got over there, he was pointing at the shirt. You know, taking credit, obviously, for the expression, which he should. It was his expression back at the 92 Rumble. And just a really, really cool experience. Wrestle Reunion was actually very cool overall. A lot of big names there. You know, Sid Vicious was there looking completely bored, and he actually bailed pretty early on. Kevin Nash was there, since he was in town. He does conventions like that. There was an ECW section. They had Tommy Dreamer, who was looking a little heavier than the last time I saw him, both in the face and in the body. But Tommy was there. Stevie Richards was there, looking pretty good. Sabu was there, wearing the Arabian head deal. And for whatever reason, he was running around the convention barefoot. Not quite sure why, but he was. Rhino was there as well. Diana Hart Smith, the wife of the British Bulldog, was there with her tiara. Her son was there as well. He wrestled on the Legends show. Jake the Snake Roberts was there, and I got a little something to say about Jake. Actually, let me just say who else was there. Lex Luger was there, and it was good to see Lex, because he, too, has fallen on some tough times. And I don't know if he suffered a stroke or something happened where he was paralyzed for a while, but he is not paralyzed now. He's walking around on his own with a cane, and again, Luger doesn't have any of that muscle that he used to have, but he looked in pretty good spirits. Honky Tonk Man was there, looking just like the Honky Tonk Man. Ahmed Johnson was there. I couldn't believe that it was Ahmed Johnson. It was actually, you know, Noah had to say to me, "I think that's Ahmed Johnson." I said, "That can't possibly be him." It was this huge black dude from behind, and I said, "Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's, you know, Ice Train from, you know, the WCW days or something." I said, "Let me go see. Let me go walk around." And I did one of these things where you kind of walk close to the person, pretend that you're looking at something else, and then turn around to go back. And when I turned around, I looked at the guy right in the face, and I said, "Holy shit, that's Ahmed Johnson." He gained an unbelievable amount of weight. I don't want to say that like Yokozuna weight, but he is a lot bigger than he used to be, and not in a good way. And the funny thing about Ahmed Johnson and me referencing him is that he was deep in conversation with Diamond Dallas Page. And I was trying to eavesdrop on their conversation, because that's what I do, and just trying to find out what the hell could Ahmed Johnson and DDP be talking about. And sure enough, it was DDP trying to sell Ahmed on his Yoga for Real Guys program. I just got a huge kick out of that. I just thought that was priceless. That was one of those moments I was just, I said I had to talk about that on the Sound Off. So, Wrestle Reunion, let me talk about Jake the Snake here for a little bit, because when we first walked in to the hall, to the room at the hotel, this huge gala hall, which is where they had the event, Jake was the first person we saw. He was sitting at a table next to Honky Tonk and Luger and somebody else that I didn't know. And the first thing we noticed is that Jake the Snake was holding a beer in his hand. And I thought, oh, that's kind of odd. I had not heard anything really negative about Jake the Snake in a while. I had just assumed that perhaps he had finally gotten back on the wagon and was doing well. And, you know, look, just because he's holding a beer doesn't mean that, you know, he's near death and doing horribly. But Jake has had a very well-documented history with alcohol and alcohol abuse. And the first image you see when you walk into this event being Jake the Snake holding a beer, that's not something that you want to see. And there he was drinking a beer, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, but whatever, it's Jake the Snake. And I would estimate that over the course of the next 3 or 4 hours that we spent at Wrestle Reunion through the Legend show that they had that afternoon, Jake, I probably lost track of how many beers Jake had. Jake had to have had a minimum of 4 or 5, maybe 6 beers. And it was very clear just the way that he was behaving and the way that he was acting and treating certain people that Jake the Snake Roberts is, if he was back on the wagon, boy, did he fall off with a thud. This was the Jake that unfortunately a lot of people would expect to see, and it was actually pretty goddamn sad seeing Jake the Snake walking around an event. There were a lot of fans and even some families and a lot of longtime fans, you know, obviously who love going to these sorts of things and meeting their heroes and people from the past. And the fact that Jake, you know, couldn't be bothered to put the fucking beer down for fucking 2 hours or 3 hours, and he's walking around, you know, drinking up a storm. And during the Legend show, there was actually a match between the Honky Tonk Man and Tito Santana. And before the match, I think Honky had made some derogatory comments about Jake. And it was obvious that Honky and Jake were there as friends. They're very good friends. They were there together. I don't know if Honky is the one responsible for, you know, watching over him. But I don't want to make it sound like there's bad blood. They were there as friends. They left as friends. But Honky was making some derogatory comments about Jake, and it led you to believe that there was going to be a spot in the match, or maybe after the match, where Jake would get involved. Maybe he'd give Honky a DDT. I thought for sure that's where this was going. And Honky loses. I believe he lost the match to Tito. And Jake is all of a sudden, he's near us in the crowd, and he's looking, and he's got a beer in hand. What else is new? And he's, you know, pretending to have this fake belly laugh at Honky's expense, and he's pointing at him and making fun of him. And I could see where this is going, and I'm like, all right, you know, I don't know how they're going to pull this off, but I'm sure Jake can go in the ring and do one DDT spot if he's not going to wrestle a match, because clearly he was not in any capacity to be wrestling a match. And Honky is in the ring with his hands on his hips, pointing at Jake and taunting him, and he got on the mic, and he's bad-mouthing Jake. And I said, all right, here we go. You know, Jake's going to go in the ring. But no, Jake never went in the ring. Jake never did any DDT. He never did anything. All he did was he stared at Honky, turned around, flipped the crowd off, and walked away. That was it. So not a good day for Jake the Snake Roberts. In fact, it was actually pretty fucking embarrassing. And I think it was on a Sound Off, what, 4 years ago, I think it was, that I gave Jake Roberts 5 years to live. And I'm actually very happy to see that Jake is still around. And I thought he was doing a lot better than apparently he is. And judging by his one appearance here at Wrestle Reunion, I still think I may win this bet. Don't count me out yet. I gave Jake 5 years to live about 4 years ago. And judging by the path he's on now, we'll see what happens. But that was actually a rather depressing sight at Wrestle Reunion. But the rest of the event was actually very enjoyable. I said there was a Legend show, which, again, we really hit it on the right day because that was the only day they were having a Legend show. And, actually, you know, before I even talk about the Legend show, let me just talk about some of the other people that I met. One person that we ran into, and Noah was in a conversation with him, and I kind of joined in on it, was Vladimir, the superfan. Now, a lot of you, I say Vladimir, you have absolutely no idea who I'm talking about. You probably think I'm talking about Vladimir Kozlov. You know who Vladimir is. If you've been a wrestling fan for any number of years, if you were ever in attendance at the old Madison Square Garden shows, if you've ever seen any of the old Madison Square Garden WWF pay-per-views, you have seen this man. He is in great physical shape, usually wearing like a white tank top with glasses, cheering on his favorite wrestlers, usually in the front row or usually somewhere close to the front row. This guy was jacked enough that he could have been a wrestler himself, you would have thought. You have seen this man before. His name is Vladimir, and he was always at those WWF shows, especially in the New York area. And then all of a sudden he disappeared. In fact, the last time I can remember seeing Vladimir in a WWE show might have been the first or maybe the second, because he might have been at both, one-night stand pay-per-views back in 05 and 06. I don't really remember seeing him ever since then. So I had the opportunity to get a photo with him, first of all, and you got to see this picture because this guy, he's 52 years old now, and he just has not changed at all. He looks exactly the same, and the guy's 52 years old. I can only pray that I could be in that kind of shape when I'm 32, let alone 52 years old. But we had the chance to talk to Vladimir a little bit, and it was very interesting listening to him talk, because I said to him, listen, you know, I don't see you at a lot of events anymore. What's the deal? And he says, you know, yeah, things have changed. You know, he used to get what he called, he kept referring to it as season tickets. And he used to describe the way he used to get these tickets, him and those other select fans you would always see at those shows, they would wait outside sometimes for quite some time to get those seats. It wasn't just like they had a contact who just gave them good seats. No, it didn't work that way. But he used to obviously get very good seats. And what happened is after a while, you know, WWF realized they had this core contingent of fans that constantly went to the shows, and then they would treat them well after a while. But as WWE got bigger and more corporate, they lost out on that privilege. And so when that ended, so too did his voyages to all of the shows. That's why you don't see him anymore. He's not even really a fan of the product right now. And he actually went on a pretty passionate rant about steroids. And a lot of the guys that have taken steroids, that have died from steroids, he seemed to be very upset by that, which kind of shocked me. I didn't know that that was something that really stuck in his craw, but apparently it does. And he talked about that with us for probably 10 minutes. So it was actually a very interesting look into his psyche and why he no longer really follows the product and doesn't go to the shows anymore. I don't know that he's completely abandoned wrestling altogether. But obviously, he's not the fan he once was. So, very interesting insight into one of those old superfans that, again, everybody has seen at one time or another. Also had an opportunity to chat with my good friend George Napolitano, the legendary wrestling author and photographer who was there, of course, shooting pictures throughout the weekend. He was at WrestleMania as well, shooting photos. You can listen to my interview, by the way, with George back on Sound Off 182. For those of you interested in wrestling history, that's a show I think you'll enjoy. So it was good to see George. Got a photo with him as well. Black Jack Brown, who anybody here in New York knows of Black Jack Brown. He was all over WrestleMania weekend. Got to talk to him for a little bit as well. So then came the Legends show. And we didn't know the card. They didn't announce the card in advance. We didn't know any of the matches on the show. But we figured we'll stay for it. The ticket that we bought entitled us to stay for the Legends show. We were in the third row, I think. Second row, actually, I think. And the first match was actually the New Age Outlaws against the Varsity Club. Out came the Outlaws looking pretty good, I have to say. The Outlaws looked like the Outlaws of old. And Road Dogg did his shtick. Billy Gunn did his, you know, you're not down with that. We got two words for you. It was actually kind of funny because their music never played. There was a malfunction at the junction, so to speak. So their theme music never played. They came out to no music, and they were kind of mocking the they were mocking the organizers for that. And the ring announcer had actually announced them as 11-time tag team champions. I don't know where the hell he got that number from, because as Road Dogg said during his intro, they were 7-time tag team champions. Although he did say he did make a comment, and I put the video actually of the Outlaws entrance up on my Facebook. Road Dogg made the comment, according to this guy, you know, 11-time tag team champions. The Varsity Club actually beat the Outlaws, which surprised me. So that was kind of an interesting way to start the show. We saw Vader came out. I had no idea that Vader was going to even be there that day. I knew he was supposed to be signing the next day. So that was a pleasant surprise. Vader coming out in his old garb, looking, you know, still very big. Looks like he may have lost a little bit of weight, but he's still very big. And Vader came out. People went nuts. We had Matt Classic was in action. And for those of you who don't know the Matt Classic gimmick, Matt Classic is played by Colt Cabana. Colt Cabana also had a table at Wrestle Reunion. I did not get a chance. I should have gone over just to talk to him. I know we have competing podcasts. But he does this gimmick on the indies where it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. People know it's him under the mask. But he dresses up as an old-school wrestler. I mean, you look at him in the Matt Classic outfit, and he looks like a wrestler out of the 60s. And the mannerisms, his taunts, his moves, he looks like a wrestler that was literally transported in a time warp from 1958. And it's great. He is awesome. Awesome in the role. I had never seen the Matt Classic character in person. This was my first time. And Cabana was fucking awesome in this role. He was phenomenal. So if you're ever, you know, going to an indie show, you hear about Matt Classic, oh, who the hell is that? Check him out. It is extremely entertaining. And we got to see Leilani Kai in action. Leilani Kai was, I believe, the women's champion at the first WrestleMania. I believe she lost the title to Wendi Richter. She also competed at WrestleMania 10 against Alundra Blaze. So she's an old-school ladies wrestler. Very cool to see her in action as well. Finley was there. He had an impromptu match against David Hart Smith. David Hart Smith was playing the dastardly heel. It was actually a pretty stiff match, too, that Finley won in the end with the Emerald Frosion. So that was a pretty good match. I mentioned Honky Tonk Man was there, dressed up as the Honky Tonk Man, of course. Greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, or so he says. He sung his song before the match. I got the entire thing on video, so if nothing else, you have to go on my Facebook page to check that video out. He did his song. He had a match with another former IC champion, Tito Santana, who looked to be in pretty good shape for a guy his age. I believe Tito won that. The funniest thing was they had some fat guy in action in another match. Just a very generic-looking, heavy guy with a singlet on that had the letter C on it. And everybody in the crowd just assumed that the C stood for cookie. Thus, there were chants of C is for cookie during his match, which he picked up on. He had a nice laugh about it. He was a good sport. I love wrestling fans. So the Legend Show was actually a hell of a lot of fun. The only thing we didn't stay for was the final match, which was some sort of 6 or 8-man tag with a lot of old-school guys. Guys in masks who I admit I did not know, although Larry Zbyszko was in that match. And contrary to Twitter rumors over the weekend, Larry Zbyszko is not dead. He is still alive. So he was there, but we just had to move on. We had other things to do, so we didn't stay for that match. A good time was had by all. I really can't say enough good things about Wrestle Reunion. I got a chance to talk to Bill After for a few minutes as well, who, as I mentioned, is the organizer of the event and a legend in wrestling himself. Got a photo with him as well. And did a very good job. There's actually an 8th Wrestle Reunion up in Canada, I think, I think it's next month, actually. So if Wrestle Reunion comes to your town, I highly recommend checking it out. Pick one day. If there's a legend show, that might be the better day to do it. But I'm very happy that we had an opportunity to hit that up. It was a lot of fun. That night, we had an opportunity to go to the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony at the American Airlines Arena. Of course, Edge was the headline attraction, the Four Horsemen going into the Hall of Fame, Yokozuna being inducted posthumously, Mike Tyson, Ron Simmons, and Mil Máscaras also going into the Hall of Fame. I hope I didn't miss anybody. A pretty good Hall of Fame class, not the best by any means, but I think a lot of very deserving inductees going in. And this was my first Hall of Fame. I was actually very much looking forward to being a part of it. And in recent years, WWE has really bungled these things by rushing people through their speeches. And in fact, at one point, for a couple of years, they had a gigantic countdown clock in the back of the building that people could see counting down. People only had 5 minutes, and they had to rush their speeches, and it was terrible. I think Steve Austin only talked for about 10 minutes when he went into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. And, you know, the Dory and Terry Funk, the Funk brothers, going into the Hall of Fame, and I think they each had 2.5 minutes. I mean, for a while, it was very, very bad. And I'm happy to say that at this year's Hall of Fame, there was none of that. There was no countdown clock. Nobody appeared to be rushed. In fact, the Horsemen were out there because you had JJ, Rick, Wyndham, Tully, and Arn, each having a chance to speak. And Dusty actually did the induction for them, Dusty Rhodes. And the Horsemen were probably out there for about an hour. I mean, they gave the Horsemen about an hour. So they were out there for a long-ass time. And it was great. Ric Flair was great. He told a funny story about, you know, since he was last inducted into the Hall of Fame, he has once again remarried, and he told a story about his last wife, Tiffany, after the Hall of Fame, where he was inducted a couple of years ago, calling him up and saying, listen, when are you going to grow up? And, of course, Rick said, grow up? Are you crazy? And he stayed out the rest of the night with the boys, and it was just Ric Flair being Ric Flair, basically. Good to see Barry Windham there. Barry Windham, it sounded like the guy was near death a couple of months ago. He suffered a heart attack and a stroke. And I think I had mentioned on the Sound Off once that Triple H was the driving force in WWE who got the company to pay for his rehabilitation, even though Barry Windham had no longer been working as an agent for WWE. Triple H got him the care that he needed. And you would look at Barry Windham at the Hall of Fame and never even know the guy was sick. He looked great. And his speech was pretty good, and Tully Blanchard actually talked the longest, I think, out of all the Horsemen. He had a very good speech, which is not surprising. I think for a living now, he does you know, kind of inspirational talks to prison ministries and stuff. So he's a very well-spoken guy, and we talked to him. We interviewed him on Friday, very articulate and very very good in that setting. And then Arn Anderson was the last person to speak, appropriately enough. People loved Arn. Everybody loves Arn Anderson. Come on. I mean, Arn Anderson is a man's man. And I even had the chance to talk one-on-one with Arn after our interview with him and Tully. I just went over to him, and we were talking for about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes straight. Just a really, really cool guy. And the Horseman induction was probably the best of the bunch. I was pretty nonplussed by the Mil Máscaras induction, and that's mainly just because he was going in and out of both English and Spanish. So it was difficult to understand certain things he was saying. And in fairness, the audio in the building, at least where we were, was not great. It was actually very difficult to understand almost everybody throughout the entire night. JBL was the first person out to do the Ron Simmons induction, and a lot of people online have said that JBL had the best induction speech, and he was telling certain jokes that people were reacting. I only understood maybe half of what JBL was saying, and it's not because he was being unclear. It was because the audio in the building wasn't that great. This was a problem throughout the entire night. Didn't ruin the night, but the audio made it very, very difficult to understand people. So when Mil Máscaras came out talking half English and half Spanish, you know, it was already difficult to understand people. I just kind of said, I kind of tuned out, to be honest with you. We had Yokozuna was inducted. The Usos came out, had a very good speech themselves. They introduced their father, Rikishi, who came out to do the actual... I guess Rikishi accepted on Yokozuna's behalf. He passed away 12 years ago. And that was actually kind of a touching induction. It was really a shame that he couldn't be there to accept, because I said Yokozuna was a very deserving recipient, I thought, of a Hall of Fame ring. And I was happy to see him inducted. Mike Tyson was inducted by Shawn Michaels and Triple H, who basically did an Abbott and Costello comedy routine when they came out. If they had done this for anybody else, I would have been kind of upset. But for Mike Tyson, you know what? Everybody took it very lightheartedly. They were actually really funny, too. It helps when the comedy you do actually does make you laugh. So that was actually a lot of fun. Mike came out. His speech was interesting. Might be the best way to describe it. He was rambling at certain times. He was cracking some jokes about doing the show at WrestleMania 14 because he was almost destitute and he was going to lose his house, which I think is bullshit. I don't think he was going to lose his house. But Mike, how could you not like Mike Tyson? I mean, for all the faults and for all the things he did early on in life, you know, he paid his penance, and by all accounts, I mean, he's just a really nice guy and clearly very happy and very honored to be there. A big, legitimately big wrestling fan. And again, if you look at the supposed celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame, and you can make jokes about Drew Carey. I mean, give me a fucking break. Drew Carey being in the Hall of Fame, what a fucking joke. But you look at people like Mike Tyson, and there are very few people who you can say, in terms of celebrities, non-wrestlers, could deserve a spot, legitimately deserve a spot in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. And Mike Tyson is one of those people, because his involvement in early 98 really helped launch WWF over WCW. I mean, it was only a couple of weeks after WrestleMania 14 when Austin won the title that they finally won a round in the ratings wars after 83 weeks against WCW, and the tide really started to turn at that point. It was Mike's involvement that really did a lot to help that company. And remember, at that time, even though Mike Tyson's boxing career was already pretty much dead, he was still the biggest pay-per-view box office attraction in the world. Brock Lesnar, actually, later on would become the number one pay-per-view attraction, but Mike Tyson was still number one. So it was a big coup on WWE bringing him in, and he had a dramatic impact on business, and he deserves to be in there. So does Mr. T, quite frankly, but Mr. T doesn't want to go in. And I've actually never heard one positive thing said by anybody in WWE about Mr. T, about working with him, about his involvement in the mid-80s. Roddy Piper in particular, as a shoot, legitimately hates his guts. Mr. T apparently had quite a chip on his shoulder, was very difficult to work with. I've never heard that about Mike Tyson. So very cool to see him go in the Hall of Fame. Christian came out to induct Edge. He was cracking jokes about Edge and then got very emotional. He got very serious and confided that it was very early on that Edge said, listen, I have to do this because I need to support my mother. You know, Edge's mom was a single mom, and he had this goal in mind that he would one day be able to buy her her own home, which obviously he was later able to do, and Christian got very emotional. Edge came out, they embraced for quite a while, and Edge's speech was actually very good. He also cracked jokes on a lot of different people, thanked a lot of people, including Glenn and Mark, which he quickly moved on from. He didn't really elaborate on that, although I think we know who Glenn and Mark are. A very good Hall of Fame ceremony. I did not see the TV version that aired on Monday night, so I'm sure they chopped that thing up into a million pieces. But for those of you who were interested in how the ceremony was very good, and I would say if they release the whole thing on DVD, it's worth picking up a copy of. Sunday, of course, was the big day, WrestleMania 28 at Sun Life Stadium. And again, I had the great honor of being able to be part of the pre-show press conference. It was a press conference, really it was about an hour or two before the pay-per-view started. And in the press area, they brought out some big names. They brought out Sheamus, they brought out Chris Jericho. They even had people like Mike Tyson and James Durbin from American Idol, who was there. I believe he was on American Idol Season 10. He has become good friends with Chris Jericho, so that's why he was there. Maria Menounos, John Cena, The Rock. I had the pleasure of being able to ask questions to almost all of them. I think everybody except really Tyson and Jericho, I was able to ask questions to Sheamus, The Rock, John Cena, and a couple of others as well. Maria Menounos, Machine Gun Kelly, who ended up singing John Cena's music before Cena's theme hit at WrestleMania. So there's actually a video right now of me asking questions to Sheamus and The Rock for those of you who are interested. It was a fun experience for me, especially being able to be in the middle of all that when I had not planned on doing so. And I had the pleasure of being part of that. So you can go on my Facebook and check out those videos there. To me, it was just a trip being able to be part of that. That whole thing, and ask questions to both halves of the WrestleMania main event, literally an hour before showtime. The video of me asking John Cena a question is not up. I have it. I just didn't post it. But anyway, the press conference pretty much, the thing about the press conference that was interesting, I also put video up of Mike Tyson crashing the press conference at the very beginning when Sheamus came out. Literally as he started talking, there was a commotion in the back of the press room, and I happened to be filming on my iPhone at the time. I turned around, and there was Mike Tyson, who came in, and again, there was nothing, there was nothing really heated that was going on. It was all in good fun, and in the end, Sheamus posed for a photo with Tyson. Mike, again, he's just a fun-loving guy. He's there to have fun. He was really having a good time, and I put that video up on my Facebook as well. Then came time for the pay-per-view. It was time for WrestleMania. They had Lillian Garcia sing the national anthem. I believe it was the national anthem at the beginning. I've seen where a couple of people were upset there was no opening show pyro. I will say that it struck me that there wasn't any pyro. Usually when these things go on the air, especially a big show like WrestleMania, you expect these huge explosions and this big rousing pyro performance. I in the end, I wasn't really bothered too much by it because I know why they didn't have pyro at the beginning of the show. There was a lot of pyro on the show, not at the beginning. I mean, for a lot of entrances, including the main event. Believe you me, there was more than enough pyro on the show. And I think the reason they held off on not having it at the beginning was because around the middle of the show, they claimed that they had set the new attendance record, which, again, is doubtful. And that's when they set off a whole big pyro display. And I love those faraway shots that they have from, it's either a helicopter or a blimp, above the stadium, when they have those above stadium shots in these open air stadiums, and you see the fireworks going off around the ring and the rim of the stadium, I just think that's so cool. So anyway, that didn't bother me so much as much as it bothered one or two other people who were very much upset by the fact there was no pyro to kick off WrestleMania. What we'll do here, we'll take the card match by match in the order that it occurred, and I'll just give some quick thoughts here. I don't want to belabor it too much. I think we all know who won which match at WrestleMania. Obviously, the show started with a World Heavyweight Championship. Actually, let me just backtrack a little bit here. There was a Tag Team Championship dark match. It was a triple threat match. Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel against the Usos, against Primo and Epico. I believe Justin Gabriel sustained an injury in this match, some sort of ligament injury that's going to keep him out possibly for a few months, at the very least several weeks. Nobody in our section, anyway, even knew that an injury had taken place. I'm still not sure exactly when it happened. I admit I wasn't exactly paying close attention to the match. Primo and Epico did retain their titles, though. I do know that. The pay-per-view opened. We had Daniel Bryan defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Sheamus in a match that I was very much looking forward to. And one of the questions that we had asked Daniel Bryan when we interviewed him on Friday was the fact that, you know, you look at last year and you look at now, and in a lot of ways you've come full circle. You know, you and Sheamus had a U.S. title match, we said to him, last year at WrestleMania, that got bumped off the show at the last minute. And even then, their dark match ended up transforming into some sort of battle royal. Here we are a year later, and you guys have a match on the pay-per-view. You are the defending World Heavyweight Champion. And, you know, Brian's answer was interesting to that question, because he did say in the interview with us that he doesn't take anything for granted. He always, I don't want to say he always expects the worst, but if he's told something or he's promised something, in this case a match on the show, he's actually come to not expect it, because he's always had to scratch and fight and claw his way for everything in his career, and certainly in his time so far in WWE, it has not been an easy journey. And it's almost eerie looking back on his words there, given what happened here at the pay-per-view. This crowd, let me tell you, being at Sun Life Stadium, there were a ton of Daniel Bryan fans at WrestleMania. Even before the show went on the air, there were pockets of fans all throughout the stadium chanting, yes, yes, yes. There were tons of yes signs. I didn't realize how bad it was until I went back and watched the pay-per-view version. If you look at when Bryan and Sheamus are in the ring, that entire front row section of the hard camera is littered with people holding up yes signs. As a Daniel Bryan fan, I thought it was fantastic. He gives AJ a kiss. This is after the bell has already rung. And as soon as AJ steps off the apron, boom, brogue kick, 1-2-3, Sheamus in 18 seconds. And I timed it on my iPhone when I watched it back. WWE is likely going to try to claim that it was 8 seconds. Because they did not break the record. What they were trying to do here, apparently, was set a new record for a world title change at WrestleMania. They were trying to top the Kane-Chavo Guerrero ECW title match from, I believe, WrestleMania 24, which clocked in at 9 seconds. This wasn't anything close to 9 seconds. It was a legitimate 18 seconds, which is what they called it on pay-per-view. And from what I understand, they're going to try to pass it off possibly as an 8-second title win, which I would love to see them try to do. Given that on the pay-per-view they were already saying it was 18 seconds. How you go from 18 seconds to 8 seconds is some really fuzzy math I'd love to know. Maybe they will still call it 18 seconds. I don't know, but based on what I read on some of the other websites, they may try to pass this off as a record-setting 8-second title change. You and I both know it's bullshit. If you didn't know, you know now. It wasn't 8 seconds. It was 18 seconds. And that makes it worse almost, because if the reason they did this was to try to set some sort of WrestleMania record, and they couldn't even do that, then what was the point? I mean, I really feel bad for Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. I know Sheamus won the belt and everything, but you got to know that these guys were hoping to go out there and have at least an opportunity to steal the show. I'm not saying they would have. Sheamus is a good enough worker, and Daniel Bryan is one of the best in the world. They could have gone out there and had a kick-ass match, even if it went 8, 9, 10 minutes. And the fact that it went 18 seconds... it is what it is. I know you look at the crowd at Raw the next night and you would think, wow, this loss may have been quite a boon to Daniel Bryan's career. Maybe in losing, he actually got over more than, if he had won or if he had had a long match but then lost. I question whether or not we're going to see that kind of reaction from a Raw crowd, you know, every week. I do think there's something to the fact that it was a very unique crowd in Miami. Who knows? Maybe Daniel Bryan gets over more in losing. But for one night anyway, I could tell you that Noah got a picture of me right after this match ended. My jaw was agape. And that was not a posed photo. That was my legitimate, honest-to-God, genuine reaction when this match was over. I could not believe that they ended this match in 18 seconds. I just couldn't believe it. And a really shitty way, quite frankly, to start off WrestleMania. If you're a Sheamus fan, I guess, you know, you're happy as a pig in shit. But if you're a real wrestling fan, if you're a real fan of Sheamus, or if you're a real fan of Daniel Bryan, and you wanted these guys to go out there and have a kick-ass match, I don't see how anybody could have been happy with how this show started. So to me, it was a bad omen, WrestleMania starting out that way. But yeah, there you go. Sheamus takes the title, and what a waste. Now, my prediction, of course, was that Sheamus was going to win the match but not the belt, so I was already wrong in that prediction. Randy Orton and Kane had what was pretty much a nothing match. I've heard their match on SmackDown this week was much better. I have not yet watched it. I don't know if they were just trying to swerve people who they just assumed, oh, well, everybody thinks Randy Orton's going to win anyway, so let's have Kane win. I was actually happy with Kane winning, even though my prediction was wrong again. I had picked, I think all three of us actually on the last show had picked Randy Orton to win. I think most people had actually picked Randy Orton to win. He did not. Kane beat him fair and square with a choke slam off the top rope, or the second rope, I guess. Good for Kane. He actually he deserves it. You know, Kane deserves a big, legitimate win like that on the WrestleMania stage. So I was happy for the big guy. Intercontinental Championship on the line. Cody Rhodes defending against the Big Show. I was just happy to see the Intercontinental title actually defended at WrestleMania. It has not been defended very often in the last 10 or 11 years at WrestleMania. So it was about time. This match was, you know, again, not really much of a match. It went, I don't know, it felt like it went 5 or 6 minutes maybe. I really don't remember too much about it except that poor Cody Rhodes got speared in the groin by Big Show. He was off the mark a little bit, and that looked like it sucked. And then came the knockout blow. 1, 2, 3, Big Show, clean as a sheet, wins the Intercontinental title. I had predicted that Big Show would win the match, but not the title, and, well, he won the title. And he sold it like $1 million to his credit. He really, yeah, he was crying. He had tears running down his face. He kissed his wife, Bess, at ringside. It really was a feel-good moment, which, you know, in a lot of ways, I guess it had to be. If you look at this Cody Rhodes Big Show feud up until that point, Cody was just embarrassing him every single week with the videos and talking about how, you know, Big Show always loses at WrestleMania, and sometimes he's not even on WrestleMania. One year he was at the World Restaurant in Times Square, and he wasn't even on the show. I mean, I just assumed they were going to keep the feud going, and Big Show would get his feel-good win at some other pay-per-view. And apparently the feud is continuing, but they felt they wanted to give Big Show a big win here, and he got it. And he's a new Intercontinental Champion, and you know what? I've said before that it's not the worst idea in the world to put the Intercontinental title on a main eventer or somebody who has been a main eventer in the past. Big Show may not be in the main event picture right now, but he's a main event guy. And up until recently, he was feuding with Daniel Bryan for the World Heavyweight title. So to put the IC strap on somebody like that may actually do a lot to bring some prestige back to that championship. So I'm actually not against that move. I don't know that I would have taken the title off Cody. I think he was having a nice run. But, you know, a nice moment for Big Show on the WrestleMania stage. We then had the Tag Team Divas match, which was the perfect opportunity for us to move around the stadium a little bit. We had some extra seats, actually. We moved around to a different part of the stadium. We figured, you know, of all the matches, this was probably the one to move around during. No offense to the women involved. I know that in the end it was Kelly and Maria, and I did see enough of the match to see Kelly's big move that she had told us about. Maria got the roll-up, I think. I forgot if it was on Beth or Eve at the end, but the baby faces won, which was my prediction. So that I think that was my first prediction of the show to come true, so I was actually pretty happy about that. We had moved at that point to a different part of the stadium, and if you take a look at some of the pictures in my WrestleMania album on Facebook, you'll see where we were sitting. I think the seats we ended up in were just fucking phenomenal. They weren't ringside or anything, but we had a terrific view of the stage. You know, there was a nice breeze in the air. The weather was perfect. I mean, you just could not ask for a better experience at WrestleMania. So we were riding pretty high at this point, and this was also the point of the show where we hit our first main event. Hell in a Cell, the End of an Era match, Shawn Michaels, guest referee, Undertaker against Triple H. And actually, let me go back a little bit here, because what I noted in my notes, I know I normally don't do this, I was actually giving star ratings to the matches. So just to go back, since I forgot to give them here, I didn't give a star rating to Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. I mean, how the hell could you in an 18-second match? I gave 2 stars to Randy Orton and Kane. I gave 2 stars to the Intercontinental title match. I gave no stars to the women's match, because I just did not pay close enough attention to it, so that would be unfair of me to give that a star rating. So now we get to Hell in a Cell, Undertaker and Triple H. The entrances for this match were fantastic. Triple H came out of his little crypt, I guess you would call it. When he got to the foot of the aisleway, I'm not sure how good this came across in the TV version. You could tell. I watched the match back on TV. I loved how when Triple H got to the foot of the aisleway, the camera was on him. And if you look in the background at the very top of the stadium, they were setting off fireworks. And the camera did a complete panoramic view, a complete rotation, and there were just fireworks going off all around the stadium. I just thought that was really cool. Undertaker came out, and as I said online, if you've never been, forget other pay-per-views. I know many of you have been to Raws and SmackDowns and B-show pay-per-views where Undertaker has made his entrance. And if you've never been to a WWE live event and been part of an Undertaker entrance at all, then by all means, I mean, I guess he's really not wrestling at any shows anyway now other than WrestleMania, but you've got to get your ass to one of these shows. There really is nothing like an Undertaker entrance in person. And to me, it's got to be on the big stage. It's got to be at WrestleMania. You know, in this case, it was an open-air packed stadium, 70,000 people. When the lights go out and, you know, you hear the gong and the smoke and they set off the flames and some pyro, I mean, it's just, it's an amazing experience. And, you know, it will go down as the, you know, the best entrance for any wrestler in the history of wrestling, as far as I'm concerned, is the Undertaker. Undertaker comes down wearing the hood, comes into the ring, immediately yanks the hood off his head to reveal, I don't know if you'd call it a mohawk or not. It was almost like a buzz cut mohawk. It reminded me a little bit of Road Warrior Hawk in that respect. You could hear a gasp from the crowd when he yanked that hood off. I mean, there were people in our section who were going crazy, you know. One guy was like, here it comes, and then he pulled the hood off, and there were some genuinely shocked people who were not expecting that in the audience. So, I thought it was a good look for The Undertaker. I thought he looked, every bit as menacing as he normally does. He looked quite a bit older, but he is older. You know, he's going to be 50 years old in a couple of years. He's been through hell. He's probably got the body of a 70-year-old at this point. One of his arms, I forget which one, he can't even lift really over his head anymore. I think it might be the left arm. I thought The Undertaker looked fine. And I actually really liked the touch of both guys standing in the ring. I had almost forgot that the Hell in a Cell hadn't even been brought down at this point. They played the Metallica music, and both guys kind of looked up at the heavens, and you saw the smoke. And as the Metallica, you know, the Memory Remains song played, down came Hell in a Cell. I thought that was a really cool touch. And, you know, both these guys went on to have the match that I thought they were going to have. I knew these guys would deliver. They went. They had a kick-ass match that, I don't know if it was, you know, as a wrestling match, I'm not sure if it was as good as their match last year. If it wasn't, it was pretty damn close. I love this match. I thought it was the best match on the entire show. I thought it stole the show. I gave it, 4.25 stars. This was great. And what was so great about it was, I thought the match was great even before I watched it on TV with Jim Ross's commentary. There were two things in the television version that actually made the match even better than it was from a live perspective. Number one was obviously, JR on commentary. I thought it was very appropriate for them to bring him out, if for no other matches, for this one. Because this is the match. They called it the end of an era. You've got Shawn Michaels. You've got Triple H. You've got The Undertaker. You know, three guys that Jim Ross is very familiar with. He called many of their matches, many of their wars. If there was one match on this show that it was appropriate to have him out there for, it was this one. And I'm glad, from what I understand, it was Triple H and Undertaker who requested he be out there. And at the end of the day, Undertaker requested that JR be part of his match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 26, which was Shawn's last match, and Vince McMahon turned him down. I assume it was Triple H, in this case, who probably requested it along with Undertaker. And let's be honest, if Triple H wants something, he's probably going to get it. So out came Jim Ross. The TV version was even better than the live version because of not just the commentary, but we in the stadium could not hear what was going on when Shawn Michaels, bent over and said to The Undertaker, I'm going to call it. Undertaker said, do not stop this match. We couldn't hear any of that stuff. When Triple H grabbed the sledgehammer and yelled at Shawn Michaels and says, end it or I will. End it or I will. We didn't hear any of that. And that just added to the match. It added to the drama of the match. So this was just a very well-worked match. There was not a lot of blood. The only blood was from, a hard-way shot that Triple H took to the eye, I believe. It looked like Triple H was intentionally trying to get himself busted open. And to me, it would be a hell of a lot safer to let these guys go out there and just use a blade and just bleed a gusher for one night and have a bloodbath than having poor Triple H out there telling Undertaker to really stiff him and lay in the shot and punch him in the face. His eye was swelling after a while. He got a little bit of blood, but not a lot. I actually think it would have been safer to just let these guys go out there and blade. But just a great, great match. The best part of the entire pay-per-view, the best part to me, the best image, the best shot of WrestleMania was the image of The Undertaker helping, along with Shawn Michaels, Triple H to his feet, and all three men leaving together. And at the top of the ramp, they look out to the crowd, and they all, you know, they're all basically huddled together. They embrace, they hug. It really did feel, you know, they called it the end of an era. I'm still not quite sure what that means. I don't think any of us believe it's Undertaker's last match, or that it's Triple H's last match, or that we've seen the last of HBK. Although I don't think he'll wrestle again, but, you know, whatever they mean by end of an era, who knows? But it certainly felt like the end of something, and that image of the three of those guys, you know, just hugging on the stage to a standing ovation, it gave me chills. It was a fantastically awesome image, a great way to end that match. And like I said, it was the best match on the entire show. They had Howard Finkel come out to announce the Hall of Famers, as they usually do each year. They introduced Mil Máscaras, Ron Simmons, the son and daughter of the late Yokozuna. They had the Four Horsemen out there, Iron Mike Tyson, and then they played Edge's music and introduced the Rated R Superstar, who got a tremendous ovation. In fact, pretty much everybody got a big ovation. Mike Tyson got one of the biggest ovations out of anybody. But Edge got a big ovation, too. You could tell he was really fighting back the tears. It was pretty emotional stuff. So that was actually a nice little bring me down. That was actually the positioning of things on the show was actually quite good. I thought putting the Hall of Famers after the Hell in a Cell match was a smart move on their part. Then we had Team Johnny against Team Teddy, the 12-man tag. It was, of course, Team Johnny getting the victory, so another prediction, along with the Undertaker prediction. So now I have three straight matches I called correctly, which would be the only three. David Otunga, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Mark Henry, Drew McIntyre, and The Miz. Miz got the pinfall win on who else? Zack Ryder. What a goof. He also got kicked in the nuts after the match by Eve, just to add insult to injury. It looked to me, and I have not watched this match back on TV, it looked to me like there was a botch in one of the finishing sequences of this match. I forgot who was pinning who, if it was Miz pinning somebody, or maybe it was Miz getting pinned. Dolph Ziggler looked like he was supposed to break up the pin. It was too late, and they counted three. Maybe I was looking at the screen, and I completely misinterpreted the whole thing. Again, I have not watched the TV version yet, but it looked like there was a big botch here somewhere. But in the end, Miz got the pin, and Team Johnny wins. So John Laurinaitis now is the official GM of both Raw and SmackDown. And yeah, there you go. So thank God, more Johnny. I think the whole Johnny David Otunga thing, I would have been actually pretty depressed if that would have been the end of it. So I was happy to see them win. Then we had the WWE Championship on the line. CM Punk defending against Chris Jericho. The battle of the two men who call themselves the best in the world. I felt bad for these guys because in the building, in the stadium, people did not care about this match for the first... I mean, we're talking the first 10 to 15 minutes of this match. It was quiet enough you could hear a pin drop. Maybe certain sections were more boisterous than others, but I could tell you in our section and the surrounding sections on that part of the, you know, on that side of the stadium, people just were not into this match. They were not reacting. I will give credit to Punk and Jericho because in the last 5 to 7 minutes, they really got people into it. And originally, I had given this match 3.75 stars. When I went back and I watched the TV version, it really was a very good championship match. I bumped it up to 4 stars. I thought it was a very good WWE title match. It was not the blow-away match I thought these two guys were capable of having. Perhaps they will give us that kind of match at Extreme Rules, but very well-worked match, back and forth. And in the end, you can't ask for anything more. Chris Jericho put Punk over like $1 million. He tapped right in the middle of the ring to the Anaconda Vice. And if you pay close attention, when the match was over, there was a quick camera shot of Chris Jericho kind of rubbing CM Punk's head or like scratching his head, almost like, you know, good job at the end. You know, unless he was just scratching for fleas or something like that, or maybe Punk has lice. Otherwise, I assume that's what he was doing. So I thought that was a nice little moment that got caught on camera. But yeah, you know, the WWE champion wins, retains his title clean over Jericho, makes him tap out in the middle of the ring. You can't ask for a better way for somebody to put the champion over. So there you go. Then came time for the main event. The Rock and John Cena. We had Machine Gun Kelly come out. He was introduced by Sean Diddy Combs. He performed the song Invincible. The minute he said that John Cena was up against an egomaniac, the entire stadium just booed the hell out of this guy. That was not the right thing to say to this crowd. This was as much of a pro-rock crowd as you're going to find, which I think we all pretty much predicted. No matter how hard WWE tried to get people to cheer John Cena, even if they succeeded a little bit in the weeks leading up to the pay-per-view, there was no way in hell in Miami at this show that people were going to cheer for John Cena, and they didn't. You know, Cena had his pockets of fans, but they were completely drowned out by Rock fans. Cena came out, he got booed out of the building. Then they had Flo Rida come out to perform some of his songs, which actually was a lot of fun. I actually was getting into it. So, a rare musical performance that I actually give a thumbs up to at a wrestling show. That brought out The Rock, came out to the ring, and the one, you know, the thing about this match, they were billing this match as the biggest match in the history of wrestling. That, of course, is debatable. It may go down as the biggest match, you know, when all is said and done as far as the buy rate, the box office receipts, the millions of dollars they made off this show. I think it was easily the biggest gate for any WWE show ever. So in that respect, it was the biggest show ever. But when these guys were face-to-face in the ring, it felt, you know, it had that vibe like Rock Hogan from WrestleMania 18 when they were both kind of looking at the crowd and the people were going nuts. This match had a very big-time feel to it. But I'll make another comparison here, and I'm curious if any of you agree with me on this. This match, in a lot of ways, reminded me of Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior from WrestleMania 6. You know, you had two big... And I know it's funny calling Cena a babyface, being that he was booed out of the stadium, but he is still the biggest babyface in the company, like him or not. You have the battle of the two biggest babyfaces in the company going face-to-face in the main event of WrestleMania. Big stadium crowd, big-time atmosphere. They went in there, and they had a perfectly fine, very good WrestleMania main event, you know, professional wrestling match. There was nothing wrong with it. I thought it was, in a lot of ways, it was a very basic match. But again, like Rock Hogan, like Hogan Warrior, you know, it was very well worked. If anything, I think it may have exceeded expectations. There was a bear hug in this match, much as there was with Hogan Warrior. I was actually quite stunned to see John Cena bust out a fucking bear hug of all things, but there it was. You know, they went back and forth. They both hit their moves, and you know, both guys pretty much kicked out of the other's moves. And, you know, the only big difference is that with Hogan Warrior was the guy on the rise. Hogan was, quote, passing the torch, even though he really wasn't, and putting over the Warrior. And I had predicted John Cena would win this match because I thought, you know, it's the only thing that makes sense for business going forward. But in the end, rock bottom, 1-2-3, Rock beats John Cena. Fair and square. And it doesn't even look like we're going to get a rematch. It was a one-and-done type thing. Rock beat him. He was the better man. And looking back on it, it was the right outcome because any other result to this match in that stadium would have been a very big mistake. And being there live and in person, I realized that. I still think that, you know, for business, it would have made more sense for Cena to win. He's the guy that's going to be sticking around. And believe me, Rock ain't going to be on Raw this Monday night. I can tell you that. He's got a couple of movies lined up. But this stadium, you have never seen a happier bunch of people when John Cena lost this match. When Rock got the pinfall, I watched it back on TV. And they had this one quick crowd shot just as the match ended of people going absolutely apeshit in the crowd. And that's exactly what it was around us. People were going nuts. They were so happy that The Rock won this match. And I was too. I got into it, you know, and I found myself cheering for The Rock at the end of the match. Because if you watch, you know, John Cena was being a bit of an arrogant SOB, you know. And I talked about that, you know, on the Go Home Raw. John Cena was being, you know, a cocky, brash, arrogant SOB. He kept talking like, I'm going to win this match. People can hate me, they can love me, they can boo me, but you know I'm going to win. He sounded like a classic, you know, snot-nosed little heel. And at the end of the match, he was, you know, trying to throw it in The Rock's face. He was trying to give him the people's elbow. He was being all stupid, and he paid the price for it, and deservedly so. He got pinned, 1-2-3, that was it. Now, the funny thing is that when I watched this match live, I was I was doing some live tweeting during the show, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. And I look back on that, and I think I was a little too hard on the match, because to me, the match was underwhelming. Being there live, I don't know what I was expecting. I expected a little bit more. I thought the match was more slow-paced than it should have been. I felt like The Rock got completely gassed. I mean, he just looked exhausted. Absolutely exhausted. It just looked like, you know, John Cena had to carry him through the last half of that match. And when I watched the match back on TV, Rock still looked very gassed. You could tell he completely gassed out towards the end of the match, which is understandable because The Rock, you know, this was his first singles match since the Goldberg match at Backlash in 2003. He has not wrestled a singles match since then. You know, he wrestled at Survivor Series. It was a tag match. He was standing out on the apron for most of it. So he comes out here at WrestleMania, has a 30-minute main event. It's understandable that the guy gets tired. So he got very, very tired. But I feel like I was a little hard on the match because when I watched it back on TV, it was a much better match than it was live. I actually felt like the match played out better on television than it did live. Maybe other people would disagree. I'm not saying the match wasn't fun. I feel I was very happy to have been part of that live. It was a lot of fun to be in the middle of 70,000 plus people cheering their heads off. But it just goes to show you the difference between the live perspective and watching it on TV. And in this case, I think I was a little too hard on the match. It really wasn't a bad match at all. In fact, it was very good. I gave the match 3.5 stars. Again, not as good as Hell in a Cell. Maybe not even as good of a match as Punk and Jericho, but still a very good match. And, you know, obviously John Cena did not turn heel. And if a Cena heel turn were ever going to happen, it would have been right then and there at the end of that match. Or it would have been on Raw the next night. And it did not happen. And Cena actually said this past week in interviews that he would fight WWE tooth and nail on a heel turn if they ever proposed it to him. He thinks that to be a good heel, you have to be a bad guy. And because of his work with Make-A-Wish and all the stuff he doesn't see himself as being that guy. So for anybody out there still holding out hope that John Cena is going to have this one big heel turn like Steve Austin did back in 2001... it didn't happen at Mania. It didn't happen at Raw the next night. And you heard it from the horse's mouth. If WWE ever came to Cena and said, listen, we're going to turn you heel, Cena has said he would fight it with every fiber of his being. So he is not turning heel. And you know what? I give him a lot of credit for it. If that's how he feels, he's going to stand his ground. He wants to be the ultimate babyface. Then by all means, be the ultimate babyface. As fun as I think it would be for him to go heel, I think he could really do a lot of fun things with it. Some guys just aren't meant to go heel. You know, he was heel early on in his career. He settled into this role. He feels this is the role for him, and I say good for him. There's a lot of kids out there who look up to him, who idolize him. He does a lot of good charity work and all that. So, the fact that he didn't turn heel didn't bother me. If there was ever a time to do it, that was it. They missed the boat, and that ship has sailed. And The Rock wins. WrestleMania goes off the air with a big pyro celebration. We were able to go down to ringside when WrestleMania went off the air, which was really cool. And I take credit for that because, you know, Noah, they were all ready to leave. And I said, listen, you know, we're close enough here. Let's just try to get down to the ring, which we did. We went down to ringside. So I can officially say that I was ringside for WrestleMania, and it was very cool. Lil Nate, Charles Robinson came back out to start disassembling the ring, which... Yeah, you felt bad for the guy. The guy just, you know, officiated a whole bunch of matches. He got chokeslammed by The Undertaker. You would think they would send some other lower-level members of the crew to come out and do that, but nope, there he is. He's out there taking the ring apart, and he flashed a quick Four Horsemen sign for us, which we got a photo of. It's up on Facebook. So just a really, really fun time. My first WrestleMania, I can't say enough good things about it. Yes, I was blessed to... You know, I've had access to certain things and be able to interview superstars, and that certainly did, that certainly did a lot to make this a more memorable experience for me. But I think even without that, this was a damn good WrestleMania. I don't think it was top five of all time, but to me, this was the best WrestleMania show overall. I don't even remember since when, you know, because last year's WrestleMania sucked the cock. You take out that Undertaker-Triple H match, that show last year sucked. Even with that match, WrestleMania last year overall sucked. WrestleMania 26 really wasn't that much better. Bret Hart, Vince McMahon was a huge disappointment. You had Undertaker, Shawn Michaels in the main event. Batista and Cena had a pretty good match. But even WrestleMania 26, I don't remember that being a really great show. WrestleMania 25, you take away Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, and you have probably one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. WrestleMania 24, you know, WrestleMania 24, for whatever reason, is not a show that I'm particularly fond of. I know some people are. I am not one of those people. You may have to go all the way back to WrestleMania 23 or earlier. I really think this was one of the better WrestleMania shows in a number of years. And if it wasn't top five, I probably would put it in the top 10 of all time. I know I'm biased in that because I was there, and it's hard for me to be unbiased, to kind of remove myself and pretend that I wasn't there. That is part of it, but I would like to think that even if I wasn't there, and even with that atrocity that was Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, this was a pretty damn enjoyable WrestleMania show. This was a show that was built on three big matches, all of which delivered. You know, I think all three top matches on this pay-per-view delivered. There were a couple of other good matches, but it really, you know, at the end of the day, WrestleMania is built on its main events. There were a lot of early WrestleManias in the old days, the late 80s, early 90s, that were stacked with like 13 matches, and my God, some of these matches had no business being on WrestleMania. But at the end of the day, Hogan Savage was a good match. Hogan Warrior was a good match. You know, the main event delivers. People look back fondly on that show. I think WrestleMania 28 overall was a pretty damn good show. And one other quick comment here that I forgot to mention. When the main event ended, Michael Cole on commentary, who I thought did a pretty good job. I will give Michael Cole credit. I thought he did a decent job in the main event. He made a comment when Roxina ended that just made me shake my head. I'm sure it was told to him in his headset. But he made a comment to the effect of, you know, I don't even think there was a loser here in the main event. Like, this match was so great, I don't really think anybody lost. And the first thing I thought was, of course somebody lost. John Cena lost. They're trying to make it like, oh, John Cena didn't really lose. Both guys are winners here. Shut up. Shut up. Just, ugh, God. Just, really? There was no losers in this match. You're going to try to paint this as no loser? I wonder in the official record book if WWE would actually say, you know, Rock Cena was a draw. There really was no loser in this match. It was a pretty evenly matched contest. Yeah, it was pretty evenly matched until The Rock won. Cena lost. Newsflash, he lost. Just like the next night on Raw, which I'm going to get to right now, actually. I loved it when the crowd started chanting, "You're a loser." I didn't start that chant, by the way, although I should have. I thought that was an awesome chant. Let's talk about Raw. The next night at the American Airlines Arena, the site of the Hall of Fame 2 days earlier. This was, and again, you know, I feel like I was very fortunate to have been part of all this. Part of it is just dumb luck. This was easily the best Monday Night Raw, and I've been to a lot of Raws. I've been to probably somewhere in the range of 10 to 12 Raw shows in my lifetime. This was easily the best Raw show I've ever been to. And this was easily the hottest crowd of any kind I've ever been part of in my entire life. And I wasn't sure at first if it was just us in the building and it just was coming off as a hot crowd, but it really wasn't. When I checked with my brother who was watching at home, and I said, "Listen, is this coming through on TV? Can you hear how hot this crowd is?" He said, "Yes." And then I heard from a lot of you guys, and I knew. This was one of the hottest Raw crowds maybe ever, certainly in the last several years. Now, a lot of these fans were holdovers from WrestleMania. I mean, these were the diehards of the diehards. This was, in a lot of ways, it reminded me of those old Attitude Era crowds, which is unfortunate in that I'm sure we're not going to get crowds like this every week. In fact, this Monday on Raw, we're probably going to be back to the same old, same old. But for one night anyway, this crowd was awesome. I mean, these people were there to have fun. They were chanting yes, yes, yes all night. Daniel Bryan was turned into a pariah after what happened to WrestleMania. I've got pictures of people holding up signs that said Vince screwed Bryan. There were Daniel Bryan chants in the hallways, in the bathroom. I mean, it was like nothing I've ever been part of in my life. And, you know, we got there. There were some dark matches. The first match, actually, of the night was a dark match between Dean Ambrose, a name that you may be familiar with. I've talked about him from FCW, the former John Moxley from the independent scene. Dean Ambrose beat JTG. And speaking of Ambrose, I'm not sure how many of you are actually aware of this, but there was what I assume was a little bit of an angle shot during WrestleMania weekend, which kind of flew under the radar because there were so many different things going on. But there is video on YouTube, if you look it up, an incident that occurred at the Intercontinental Hotel which is where the wrestlers were staying. I believe this took place after the Hall of Fame on Saturday night at the hotel. That's when this was filmed. And it's a video of Mick Foley in the lobby, all dressed up, probably after the Hall of Fame, interacting with a bunch of fans, just answering questions and shooting the shit and having a good time. And all of a sudden, Dean Ambrose kind of moseys on up to Foley, introduces himself as Dean Ambrose from FCW, and he goes on this rant. He doesn't yell. He doesn't scream. He just goes on this rant, basically, where he proceeds to call Mick Foley a criminal. And he accuses him of being responsible for a generation of kids doing stupid shit and killing themselves while trying to emulate Foley, which is probably not all that far from the truth. And Ambrose just gets right up in his face, and he whispers in his ear at one point, which I thought was a nice touch, a little bit creepy, calling him a criminal, and, you know, you're responsible for, I have friends who, you know, were trying to emulate you and have gotten hurt, and Foley played his part perfectly here. This really came off like a shoot. It was done in a very realistic way. Foley was trying to, you know, respond to Ambrose and said, "Oh, your friends? Is your friend dead? Like, what are you talking about here?" And I forgot what Ambrose said something else, and Foley went off on him at that point. And it was just very well done. I'm not sure if this is going to go anywhere. I'm really not sure why this was even filmed. If it doesn't turn into a TV angle, I absolutely do not know what the point of this was, unless they're going to do something in FCW. That might actually be what it is. Perhaps Mick Foley is going to be coming down to FCW, and he'll do some sort of angle, maybe even work a match with Ambrose, like CM Punk did last year. He went down to developmental, worked a match with Dean Ambrose. William Regal has done stuff down there with Ambrose. You see a pattern developing here, by the way. When all these big names go down to developmental to work with one guy, that probably gives you a pretty good impression of what they think of this one guy. Ambrose is going to be a big star. I have predicted that he will be on TV on the main roster. I said it would be not very long after WrestleMania. I still think we'll see him on TV in the next few months at most. But if this was possibly the start of an angle to introduce him on the actual main TV show, I think this would be a hell of an angle to bring him in on and to have Mick Foley help put this guy over. So, again, I'm not sure where they're going with this. It could be nothing. But if you didn't see the video, go back and check it out. It's actually pretty cool stuff. We also had some Superstars matches taped before the show. The Usos beat Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins. R-Truth beat Heath Slater. Then Raw starts. We have The Rock come out, cuts a big promo about how he's going to be WWE champion again. And in fact, The Rock has signed a new one-year deal with WWE. He had been working on a handshake agreement with Vince McMahon. Now he has signed an actual one-year contract that will take him through WrestleMania 29 next year. My assumption is that he will be fighting for the WWE championship on the show next year, and I think I know who it will be against. We'll get to that in a moment. But this was a great promo. People were hanging on his every word. They were chanting, yes, yes, yes. I mean, the entire night they were chanting, yes, yes, yes. And it was actually kind of funny because, you know, for example, it was really noticeable in the CM Punk-Mark Henry match. They would chant yes, yes, yes at everything Punk did. And if Mark Henry got a shot in on Punk, they would chant no. So it would be yes, no, yes, no. These people were having a blast. And we were having a blast. Everybody was having a good time. We had the debut on this show of Lord Tensai, who is managed by Sakamoto, who apparently is a wrestler from FCW. I'm not sure what his name is. Maybe his name is Sakamoto in FCW. I'm not sure. But for those of you who are curious, that is where he is from. It, of course, was the re-debut of the former A-Train. And people gave him a very respectable ovation when he took the mask off. They recognized him immediately. And realistically, how do you not recognize a guy like A-Train? I mean, the guy has a humongous melon on top of his shoulders. He's got piercings through his nipples. He's got piercings through his face. And it was quite noticeable that he shaved. I mean, this guy used to be a walking rug, and he completely shaved. So, you know, good for him. I he looked good in his debut. It wasn't an overly impressive debut, but what impressed me the most about it more than anything else was just how he was introduced. I liked the theme music. I liked the presentation of Sakamoto coming out and throwing the salt up in the air. He came down with his new outfit. He took the mask off. I thought that was really cool. I thought it was kind of dumb to end the match against Alex Riley, you know, on a ref stoppage. It didn't seem like people in the audience exactly knew what had happened. I think he probably should have just pinned Alex Riley after the Baldo bomb. I thought that was maybe a mistake, but No, the actual presentation I thought was actually very good, and I like the idea of seeing new faces on Raw, so I'm all in favor of it. I thought this was great. One other thing I noticed, speaking of Sakamoto, and I wonder if anybody else picked up on this, but after Mark Henry's match, he beat CM Punk by countout, so he did not win the title. Later on, after his match, Henry was not happy, and he was in the back throwing luggage around and throwing debris, and all of a sudden, Abraham Washington showed up. And maybe Abraham Washington has showed up on SmackDown. I haven't been paying close enough attention to SmackDown, but this is the first I've seen of Abraham Washington since the ECW days. And apparently he is going to recruit Mark Henry and probably will end up being his manager. And the thing I love about it is you have Sakamoto coming out essentially as a manager for Lord Tensai. You have Abraham Washington managing Mark Henry and possibly other people as well. You've got Vicky Guerrero, don't forget, is the manager for Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger. Are we seeing the return of managers in WWE? It sure seems like it to me. I just think it's fantastic. It's something I've been talking about for a long time, and I'm hardly the only one. I think managers are a very big part of wrestling. They can help get certain acts over, especially if there's somebody who can't really speak for themselves all that well. If you have a manager who's pretty good on the microphone, you know, it could really help get somebody over. But I love managers, and it looked like on this show we're in the thick of kind of a manager renaissance of sorts. So I love it. I give it 2 thumbs up. I think it's fantastic. Last thing I want to comment on as far as Raw goes, I'm not going to go through the entire show. I will say that Sheamus was quite hated on the show, and it was a big mistake on WWE's part not to have Daniel Bryan out there. But it all came down to the main event segment, which was John Cena coming out for a promo. So here we are yet again. It is now the Raw after WrestleMania. I don't know how many consecutive weeks this makes Raw without an actual wrestling match as a main event. I think it's been about a month. I'm hoping this is not the beginnings of a permanent trend. But on this show, it worked. It worked because of what they had in store for us at the end. The entire show, there were chants of, "We want Lesnar." This was, again, a crowd that was not your typical WWE crowd. This was the hardest of hardcore fans who knew. They knew what was going on. They heard the rumors. They're on the internet. They know the deal. And all throughout the night, besides yes, 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 all we heard was, "We want Lesnar. We want Lesnar." And John Cena was interrupted no less than 2 or 3 times during this one promo. He had to actually stop and let the fans chant, "We want Lesnar. We want Lesnar." And I think at that point, we all, you know, when Cena stopped and let them chant, I think we all pretty much knew how this show was going to end. But my God, when Brock Lesnar's music hit, this crowd went ape shit. Ape shit. And they went crazy. And out he came. People were, you know, creaming themselves all over the American Airlines Arena. They were going nuts. Lesnar came down to the ring, gave Cena an F5, left him laying, posed, and left. When the TV cameras went off, it's not like Brock Lesnar took the mic and, you know, sang happy birthday. He's not a very cheerful guy. He pretty much left, and that was it. And that was fine, because the people got what they asked for. And I think when Cena finally started getting up, I think he was serenaded by chants of "fuck you, Cena." You almost feel sorry for the guy, almost. Well, he was nice to me. He was nice to us. I can't really complain. As a person, he's a great guy. But yeah, this was a fantastic way to end Raw. This is one of the best Raw debuts I've ever seen. I mean, you talk about a debut where people knew it was coming. They were cheering for it. They wanted it so badly. And it's, you know, it's not like WWE wanted to fuck them. It's not like WWE said, "Oh, we're going to swerve you." They gave the people exactly what they wanted, as predictable as it may have been. And some people were shocked by it. I'm not saying everybody knew Lesnar was coming out. I didn't know Lesnar was coming out. I figured he probably was. But it's a great example of, even if people know, even if it's predictable, even if people can see it coming from a mile away, sometimes the best thing to do is to give people exactly what they want. And they got a hell of a reaction out of it. And apparently that one segment on Raw went up like over 1 million viewers. It'll be interesting to see what kind of ratings Raw does in the coming in the next 2 weeks, to see if they could sustain this momentum that they seemingly had coming out of WrestleMania. But just one of the best Raw shows, probably the best Raw show in months, and easily the best Raw show that I've ever been to. The most boisterous crowd I've ever seen in my entire life at any sort of sporting event. Just, you know, what makes the yes chant so great, it's not just people chanting yes, it's the pointing. Like Daniel Bryan points, you had this sea of people just pointing. I mean, it looked like they were just cheering on a great dictator, chanting yes, yes, yes. It was great. The other thing about Lesnar, by the way, it's good to see that Brock Lesnar actually has a neck. You know, the one thing from Brock Lesnar's first run in WWE, he was physically so much bigger. I don't want to say he was jacked up on something, because I don't think he was, necessarily. I think Lesnar has always just naturally been a very freakish individual. The Brock Lesnar of old had no neck. I mean, his shoulders and his everything was so thick. But Brock Lesnar, even though he's still a big guy, believe me, I would not want to be caught in a dark alley with Brock Lesnar. He's got a neck. He's not nearly as big and as thick as he used to be. And it's nice to see that Brock Lesnar is actually human after all. He actually does have a neck. So, you know, there you go. There was one, and I knew this would happen. There was an MMA columnist. I think his name is Jose, let me see here. Jose Rodriguez. Just wanted to mention this really quickly. In light of Brock Lesnar's return to pro wrestling, here come the MMA purists. And this MMA columnist wrote a little something about Brock Lesnar, saying that he was happy to see Lesnar leave UFC and return to WWE. He said that he can't think of a better home for, quote, a loud-mouthed, brash, and oftentimes ignorant Brock Lesnar. He did little to build the credibility of the sport, and if anything, he cheapened it. End quote. Wow. Brock Lesnar did little to build the sport. Really now? The biggest pay-per-view draw of the last generation? A man who made literally made millions upon millions of dollars for UFC, some of their biggest pay-per-view shows that they've ever done, bringing in so many new eyeballs to the sport of MMA, but yet Lesnar cheapened it. Why is that? I wonder why Mr. Rodriguez thinks that Brock Lesnar somehow cheapened the sport of MMA, as though Brock Lesnar is the only fighter to come through the doors of UFC who cut promos like a pro wrestler. I guess this person is not familiar with Chael Sonnen or Quentin Jackson. I suppose Brock Lesnar is the only person to ever be a smartass and badmouth his opponents in a very cocky, arrogant way. Perhaps somebody should introduce Mr. Rodriguez to Mr. Tito Ortiz and people like that. Anyway, Jose Rodriguez, another fucking idiot in the world among us. So I'm sure we're going to see more people making stupid, ignorant, dumb shit comments like this. You know, oh, so happy to see the pro wrestler go back where he belongs and leave this classy, elegant sport of mixed martial arts. Go fuck yourself. Anyway, Lesnar has apparently signed a one-year deal with WWE that will take him through WrestleMania next year in New Jersey, where I hope to be as well. Apparently, it's the most lucrative deal that any wrestler is currently under, with the potential exception of The Rock himself. I'm sure in due time that will probably ruffle quite a few feathers behind the scenes. But they have thrown an obscene amount of money at Brock Lesnar. I'm not sure exactly how much, but obviously it's in the many millions of dollars. And I say good. I say sometimes you got to spend a lot to get a lot. And I think with Brock Lesnar being back, it's going to bring some eyeballs back. I think it brings a fresh, I don't know if he'll be a heel or a face. I guess, I mean, really, if you look at what he did on Monday night, he should be a heel, even though he got a hero's welcome in Miami. But it's nice yet again to have a fresh face back in WWE. And the way I figure this is going to play out, you know, if Rock is teasing that he will challenge at some point for the WWE Championship, you know, my guess would be that Brock wins the title sometime between now and WrestleMania next year, and we may be in for a Brock Lesnar-Rock title match at WrestleMania 29. In fact, I could see them doing a triple main event. I could see Rock and Brock for the belt. I could see possibly them coaxing Stone Cold Steve Austin out of retirement for that match with CM Punk that's been talked about now for quite some time. You know, I think in mentioning, you know, Austin potentially coming back before, I've said that it really can't be anything but the main event. The problem with that theory then is that if you have Rock and Brock for the belt, that's got to be your WrestleMania main event next year. Which means Austin would not technically be in the main event. He would not be wrestling the last match on the show. But I think that's okay. I mean, if you have Rock and Brock for the title, you have, let's say, Austin Punk. If they can get Austin to come back, it would be the 10-year anniversary of his last WrestleMania, his last match against The Rock. And as far as the third main event is concerned, hey, I am still a very big proponent of doing Undertaker and John Cena. And if John Cena is the odd man out I cannot think of a better time to do Undertaker Cena than WrestleMania next year. I know it would be kind of cool to hold off until WrestleMania 30, but you know that's still so far away that you can't intentionally hold matches like that. You just don't know what the situation is going to be 2 years from now. I say that if Cena is the odd man out, you've got two other big matches already signed. You've got yourself a third one if you want to do Cena Undertaker next year. I think that would be one hell of a three-way headliner for WrestleMania next year at MetLife Stadium if that's the direction they wanted to go in. So I guess in due time we will find out what they do with these guys. It's kind of fun to think about it and to put some ideas together. That's the direction I would go in. I would, again, I'd have to really think about when who Brock would face in the meantime, when he would win the title. Would he win it at SummerSlam? Would he win it at Survivor Series? Would he win it at the Rumble next year? Whatever the case may be, you have him going into Mania, Rock challenging him for the title, Punk and Austin, if they could get Austin out of retirement, Undertaker, Cena. I still think Cena's the best opponent left for Undertaker at this point. I wouldn't mind Undertaker, Sheamus, but you could always do that later on. So we'll see. We'll see what direction they go in. The other thing about Raw Monday night, the dark match. There was a dark match main event. It was a six-man tag, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show against Daniel Bryan, Cody Rhodes, and Kane. They were smart enough to save Daniel Bryan's entrance for last, and the place went bonkers when he came out. You can just imagine the sheer number of yes chants when he came down to the ring. And, of course, WWE has Sheamus pin Daniel Bryan to win the match. That was the original plan. They did not want to deviate from the original plan, but I will give WWE credit. They did kind of deviate from their original plans. Instead of having Sheamus cut the show-ending promo to send the people home happy, they actually let Daniel Bryan cut the show-ending promo, which I recorded. I actually have it on my phone. I have the entire thing. I didn't post it. But he called AJ into the ring, told her to shut up and get lost. And he said, he thanked the fans and said that we may have finally convinced WWE to make him a new T-shirt, which in fact we did. And right now on WWE Shop, you can buy the brand new Daniel Bryan Yes, Yes, Yes T-shirt, which I would advise all of you to go ahead and do. Unless you don't buy wrestling shirts, then don't bother. But if you do, buy the Daniel Bryan shirt and let your voices be heard, because, they made this shirt in response to, the fan reaction. And, I certainly hope Daniel Bryan makes millions of dollars off that shirt. And if there's any chant that will replace the dreaded what chant, I am very happy that it is the yes, yes, yes chant. I still don't think that the yes, yes, yes chant is going to replace the what chant, unfortunately. I don't think the what chant is ever going to go away. I think the what chant is going to outlive all of us, unless the wrestling business dies before we do, God forbid, in which case then the what chant will finally die. But I can never see that what chant going away. But if there was ever a chant that was going to give what a run for its money, it's yes, yes, yes. So I am very happy for Daniel Bryan. It could not happen to a nicer guy. Like I said, we had a chance to talk to him. He's a very cool, laid-back, very, very much like you and me. I've been following his career since, the ROH days, one of the best wrestlers in the world, and I'm very happy for his success, even though he had a shitty night at WrestleMania. I cannot tell you how happy for him I was the next night. Seeing that reaction when we left the building, and I did get this on video, by the way, and I posted it online, you literally had fans shouting yes, yes, yes in the corridors of the American Airlines Arena as we left. They were chanting Daniel Bryan's name. Brian Blade was with me. He ran for the merchandise stand. He wanted desperately to buy a Daniel Bryan T-shirt. He literally got the last one at this one T-shirt stand we went by. They had to take the price tag off it, and they gave him the one that was on display. He started chanting, yes, yes, yes. I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. I have video of me walking down the stairs to the parking garage. I couldn't understand what I was hearing. There were people honking their horns, but it was almost like they were honking their horns in unison, almost to like the beat of a song. And then I realized they're honking their horns to the yes chant. And I went down into the parking garage, and I've got video of these cars going, yes, 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 with their car horns going beep, beep, beep. We left the stadium. There were people rolling down their windows, driving past us, chanting yes, yes, yes. It was like a cult. It was like nothing I've ever been a part of, and probably ever will be a part of in my entire life. And I really do mean it when I say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I really am happy for Daniel Bryan. It was a fun night. It was a fun weekend to be a wrestling fan. I don't think I'll ever have as much fun as I did this past weekend. I'll go to WrestleMania next year since it's in my backyard, and I don't have to fly or rent a car or rent a hotel. And I'm sure it'll be fun, but I have a very difficult time believing I will ever again have as much fun in one weekend with all of the different things that we did as I did for WrestleMania this year. If you've never been part of WrestleMania, this was my first. I cannot recommend enough that you try. I know it's not always the most, you know, inexpensive thing in the world, but if you can somehow be a part of it, whether you have great seats, shitty seats, whatever the case may be, I can't recommend it enough. I had so much fun. I met a lot of you guys, too. I met some of you guys this weekend as well. You know, David, I believe, is one of the people I met. He posted a picture of the two of us together at Sun Life Stadium on Facebook, and he literally just happened to see me. It was towards the end of the show. It was actually right at the very end of the show, I think, and he happened to spot me. He knew what I looked like. He came over. He said, "Are you the Solid Monster?" I said, "Depends. Who wants to know?" I know I've got some enemies out there, too. I have to be careful with what I say. And he said, "No, I'm a fan of the show," and he told me who he was, and I said, "Wow, it's awesome. It's great to meet you. We got a picture. We talked for a few minutes. Really cool guy." Wilfred, another fan of the show who I met at Wrestle Reunion, he spotted me. We talked for a couple of minutes. So I want to just say thank you to all the people I met this week, and I met a lot of amazing people. Again, the fact that I was able to meet Jimmy Hart, and the only thing I regret is that I didn't get a picture with him, but the fact that I was able to meet Jimmy Hart and Bobby Heenan in the same weekend is just really cool. As a longtime wrestling fan, it just doesn't get any better than that. So there you go. That was my WrestleMania experience. And just a quick few notes here on Friday Night SmackDown. I haven't watched the entire show yet. I did see the segment where Daniel Bryan dumped AJ. I can't say I disagree with him. She got what she had coming to her, as far as I'm concerned. Ryback made his debut, finally Skip Sheffield, back on TV, and looked pretty impressive. It really makes you wonder, though, when it comes to the wellness policy. When you see a guy like a Mason Ryan or a Ryback, wow. But he did look impressive in his debut, so it's good to see him back from his ankle injury. Apparently, the cast of Legends House, which is Roddy Piper, Hillbilly Jim, Jim Duggan, Tony Atlas, Howard Finkel, Gene Okerlund, Pat Patterson, and Jimmy Hart, are supposed to be on SmackDown this upcoming week. There is a live SmackDown on Sci-Fi this Tuesday, April 10th, for those of you who are not aware. And apparently these people are going to be on SmackDown, or at least at this point they're scheduled to be part of SmackDown. I'm not quite sure what that means, because the plan had been to debut Legends House on the new network once it launched. At this point, I'm not even sure if the new network is going to launch. It would be November at the earliest, but them having the Legends House cast on SmackDown Tuesday makes me wonder if they're going to make some sort of announcement about Legends House being on Sci-Fi, which was talked about. We'll find out. We'll find out this Tuesday, so that should be very interesting. Also, some quick TNA news here. TNA kind of got lost in the shuffle this weekend, but TNA has signed a new 2-year deal with Spike TV for their Impact Wrestling TV show. It will air on the network through October of 2014. Their current deal was set to expire this fall, so TNA Impact is safe. The company has been spared. Not that I expected Spike to cancel Impact, but it's good that TNA was able to lock a new deal in with them for 2 years, so that's good. What's not so good are the initial estimates for TNA's Victory Road pay-per-view, which apparently bombed. The show did about 7,000 pay-per-view buys, which is even less than their usual shitty 8,000 pay-per-view buys. That was for the Bobby Roode vs. Sting main event. I think it was less than half of what last year's show did. If you remember Victory Road last year, that was the main event with Sting and Jeff Hardy that I think we would all rather forget. I went on quite a rant about that match here on the Sound Off after that happened. So good news for TNA as far as their new deal with Spike, not so much the buy rate for Victory Road. For those of you wondering, well, how do you know the buy rate for Victory Road? TNA is a private company. They don't release that. These are cable industry estimates. There are people in the cable industry who can find this stuff out, and they do, and they report on it. So I do put my full faith and trust that these numbers, if they're not exact, are pretty close to accurate. And let's just put it this way. I'm pretty certain that TNA's pay-per-views are not doing 30 to 50,000 buys per show. Let's put it that way. Also, a quick Ring of Honor note here before I forget. Wanted to mention the fact that Ring of Honor had a couple of shows down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I was not able to attend any of them. I'm not quite sure why ROH did not attempt to have shows in the Miami area, because there was just no way I was going to force, you know, people to drive me to Fort Lauderdale so I could see Ring of Honor. It was not doable. If the shows were closer, absolutely, I would have made every effort to go to at least one of them, but they just weren't close enough. So I did not go, but I've heard nothing but wonderful things about the Davey Richards, Michael Elgin main event from last Saturday's Showdown in the Sun, Day 2, iPay-per-view. I know Ring of Honor has some big difficulties with their iPay-per-views. In fact, it was kind of a disaster in terms of the feed going out and all that, but the Davey Richards-Michael Elgin match, I've heard, was just an absolutely classic wrestling match, so I am planning to hopefully watch that match, if not tonight, sometime in the next couple of days. If I do, I may have some thoughts on that on the next Sound Off, but I just wanted to mention that. We'll do a couple of quick shout-outs here, and then we're going to wrap it up. I don't have time for a mailbag here this week. A couple of shout-outs I did not get to on the last show. Vicky from Leeds, England, writes in, "Would it be possible for me to get a shout-out? It is my 31st birthday on March 31st, and the geek in me would love a shout-out on the Sound Off. I've only been listening weekly since episode 160, but I have gone back and listened to every show that is available online. I am part of the Fantastic Four as well. My other half joined the Royal Navy last May, and I gave up work to look after the kids, so listening to the Sound Off instead of watching kids TV is the only thing that has kept me sane while he has been away. So, happy birthday, Vicky. I know her birthday has passed. Hopefully she's not too pissed off. But happy birthday. Ant, who has been a listener since episode 50, says, just wondering if I can get a Sound Off shout-out for my birthday on March 31st, another March 31st birthday. And to my almost wife, Josie, and my little dog, Austin. Josie puts up with me every day, and I just wanted to say how much I love her. So that comes from Ant. So happy birthday to him. Thanks for supporting the show. This next birthday shout-out goes out to a very special person, one of our listeners, Sarah. She says, the internets are ablaze with word that a certain Canadian gal shall be celebrating her 24th birthday this Wednesday, April 11th. Now, I'm not asking you to, but if you do happen to find a little extra time in your next Sound Off to wish said Canadian gal a very happy birthday, I am sure you would make her smile. Rumor has it she has a nice smile, too. That's what I hear. I hear Sarah has a beautiful smile. Happy birthday to Sarah. By the way, Sarah's the one that you could hear her lovely voice at the end of every single Sound Off. You'll be hearing her voice, actually, momentarily. So, very happy birthday to Sarah. Dennis from Utah, I recently broke my ankle in 5 places and had to have surgery. Can you give a shout-out to my fiancée, Carrie? We've been listening since episode 40. So there's a shout-out there for Carrie and for Dennis. Hopefully, wow, 5 places is no fun. So I guess that means you'll be laid up for a while. You can go back and listen to some old Sound Offs, too. So feel better soon. And last but not least, this one is actually about 2 or 3 weeks old, but I had to include it here. Come from Reese from Santa Rosa, California. He says, I've been a listener since the 30s. I'd like to share a quick story of how my soon-to-be 3-year-old daughter became an official wrestling fan. Her mother and I were watching The Rock concert a couple of weeks ago with her in the room. When The Rock made a comment about Cena's lady parts, my daughter looked at us and laughed out loud, saying lady parts, as if it was the funniest thing she had ever heard. She proceeded to watch the rest of Raw intently. Since then, on long car rides, she'll sit in her car seat singing, we will rock you. Cena sucks. Never has a father been so proud. Can little Serenity get her first shout-out? Absolutely. Any 3-year-old child who chants Cena sucks is actually it's actually okay in my book. Most 3-year-olds are actually big John Cena fans, but not Serenity. Oh, no. She is a Rock fan. Makes her okay in my book. So that was a really cool story, actually. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. And that's going to do it for episode 213 this week. I'm sorry I don't have time for another mailbag. Actually, my internet is not working right now. So even if I was going to possibly fit some questions in, I cannot, because I cannot access the mailbag because for whatever reason I just noticed my internet is down. So that will have to wait until next week. Do keep sending in your questions to me. Email me. It's the best way to do it if you want to try to get on the air. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, as many of you have, by the way. We picked up a whole big gob of Twitter followers since WrestleMania, and hopefully you're one of them, and if not, you need to get on there. @Solomonster is my handle. I'm sure I'll be doing some more live tweeting during Raw this week as well. Face me. Go ahead and face me on Friendbook. I don't know what the hell I'm saying anymore. My voice is shot. Friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/thesolemonster if you want access to my gallery of 100 photos from WrestleMania weekend. I got a couple of videos up there as well, including me asking questions at the press conference and some other cool stuff. So friend me on there if you haven't already done so. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes. It's very easy. You type in the name of the show. It'll come right up. Subscribe. Boom. Done. That's it. I have a YouTube page. You can look for that. And I think that about covers it. I've had quite the week here. I am still very tired. And I don't know if you can hear it. Hopefully my voice wasn't completely shot for the show. But if I sounded a little bit different, that would be why. So that's going to do it. I want to thank each and every one of you for your support, for the kind feedback you sent in on episode 212. Again, if you missed last week's show, I really think it was the best sound off ever. You be the judge. Go back and download it. Let me know what you thought of episode 212. We'll be back next week with episode 214. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for downloading the sound off. Tell all your friends and family, and we'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster sounds off on SCScoops.com.